Is there a systematic way? Is there a, all right, here I am, I control the HR, I control what we tell managers or executives to kind of build out and structure. Is there a way to not necessarily do this from a carrot and stick approach, but to influence behavior and make people better? I don't know how to phrase it, but do you get what I'm saying?
I'm thinking of two things. How businesses have handled return to the office.
But
we'll talk about that in a moment, but you're making me also think about, is it carrot and stick, or is it extrinsic and intrinsic motivation?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the People Processes Podcast. I'm your host, Rami Alijo, CEO of People Processes. And today I have Tracy Lalonde with us. She has 30 years in training, consulting, and professional development. Her courses, keynotes, guidance, they propel professionals up to success. From her early days in the consulting industry to her transition to the legal field, Tracy's career has always been focused on helping others grow, and I'm really excited to have her today. She's the author of The Joy Achiever Journey, Alleviate Burnout and Design Your Life for More Joy. And what we found, or what we kind of looked at, is that in particular, she's offering some courses and speaking engagements to increase the amount of trust and joy inside organizations. So before we let her off the rails, I want to start with a very intriguing question that Tracy kind of gets to address a lot, which is, so I have clients and we often talk about the family business versus the pro sports team kind of mentality in our kind of coaching and consulting. But the way Tracy puts it is, do you have employees or stakeholders earn your trust? They come in, they do a good job, so then you start to trust them? Or are you an organization or person that gives trust and then, yeah, maybe they lose it, but you're a trusting person first? And I see this as a huge dichotomy across our clients. So Tracy, what's the right answer?
Well, most people say there's no one right answer. However, in this case, I think there is.
Okay.
So I want to encourage people to actually give trust first. When people do that, they are able to take advantage of a physiological phenomenon. So when I extend trust to you, it releases oxytocin in your brain, which is known as the bonding hormone, or in a personal context, it's the love hormone. So it incents you to want to like me and trust me in return. So therefore, you extend trust to me, then it releases oxytocin in my brain, and I continue to trust you, and we get this nice reciprocal feel-good fest going, and that trust can grow and deepen over time. Many folks, a large majority, because I ask this question in all of my workshops, and always it's a large majority think that trust should be earned.
Right.
When we do that, we're not giving an opportunity for that oxytocin to come about. So for the natural physiological things to happen. And by the way, it's probably a combination of both, really.
Maybe don't start with the bank account numbers and the routing, here's the wire instructions. Make sure to pay yourself well.
Right. But if you feel like people have to prove themselves to you, it's just going to take a whole lot longer than if you start with baby steps or more than baby steps to begin the trust train, if you will.
So we had an issue. We moved to Max, right? This was like 2 years ago. So I have about 40 employees. We're not a big company, but this was expensive. This was like a $110,000 investment. And I have clients, I have employees who've been with me 8 and 10 years. And for them, it was like, yeah, get them the great Mac. But then we're bringing on new employees and we wound up, we normally issue a laptop, security reasons. We don't want them to use their own. We all that. And about 3 months in, we had some new employees that we wound up firing or quitting. And for the first time in 15 years, we couldn't get our equipment back. People just started disappearing because we handed them a $3,000 beautiful Mac with an extra monitor and all this stuff. Where before we were sending them a $600, ThinkPad, big, clunky laptop, corporate laptop, like you're supposed to send. And the response from my managers, my kind of executives and directors was, oh, we're going to send them PCs for the first year and then we'll switch them out. We're not going to let them have the nice stuff when they start because people quit and then they want to steal from us. And it was the immediate response was so like, we've never had this problem. We extended, we up-leveled our things so that people would be proud to work here. And then we had two people steal our stuff for the first time. And the result was this immediate fallback. So when you advise people to trust first and they go, no, 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 they have to be earned. I would expect that there's naivete, like we're going to give you a laptop and not worry about it getting stolen. And then there's, we're going to trust you, even though we know we may lose the laptop. So how do you like balance that of extending trust early, knowing that it, and a lot of times what you're doing is probably increasing your risk of pain in some places. Yeah.
Sure. Well, you know, trust is inherently a risk.
That's what it means.
And so we need to accept that the risk does come along with it. But it's kind of like, you know, when you make an agreement with somebody, you could do a handshake agreement, but get it in writing.
Right.
It's the same kind of idea of you still have to put some fail safes in place or some policies in place that you have somewhere to go should the risk culminate, you know, in the experience. But if you begin from that place of we're just going to give them a $600 laptop and then we'll give them the $300, they're going to be onto it and it's going to prevent them from being fully engaged. Unfortunately, you had a couple of bad apples.
Yeah.
And that just kind of comes with the game, if you will.
Well, that's what we wound up agreeing with that eventually. But it was I had execs who were just, no, we're not given.
Yeah. Well,
we're not doing it.
That's
right.
I get it. It's a human reaction to it, you know?
So I would think, and this may just be me, but, you know, entrepreneurs, the leaders in companies, the executives, they are less risk averse, maybe, than some, I work with a lot of accountants.
I work with a lot of lawyers.
There you go. Right. So when you are in an organization and you're telling, you know, I think if you sit down with a business owner and say, look, there's a value in extending trust, that there's this kind of process that occurs that can wind up more rapidly. But what does it do? Like, why? Let's go to that. Like, so, okay, all right, I'm going to take the risk. I believe you. They'll trust me more if I trust them. Well, what good does that do me?
Yeah. Trust does everything from top to bottom in a business. It improves camaraderie. It improves morale. It improves collaboration. It improves problem solving and innovation and creativity. It improves productivity. It improves the bottom line. Because when you improve all those other things, you're going to improve the bottom line. Because folks will feel supported. They will feel safe to contribute. They'll feel safe that mistakes are learning moments, not punishable moments. Psychological safety flourishes, stress decreases. All these good things can happen when someone feels connected and supported that they can be their best, instead of having to constantly looking over their shoulder, wondering, have I made a mistake and is it going to hurt me? Kind of idea.
So in our business, we often come, you know, we're brought in because there is some, there's a problem, right? Let's take a very simple one. Like, employees are perhaps exaggerating on their time feeds, right? Maybe they don't exactly log their lunch right. They come in early, they clock in, they spend an hour or 30 minutes. And for some reason, somehow this has become a big enough problem that now the executive or business owner is realizing, look, I'm consistently paying overtime, or there's some real problems here. And the number of business owners have been like, this is, they're stealing from me. They're not working. And they're, you know, and this is immoral and evil. And I just want to be like, look, this is incredibly common. Yeah. But when they come to us, our kind of solution is often technical or systems based. We think about, all right, let's put in scheduling so that it doesn't let them clock in early, or if they clock in late or early, or they clock out late, maybe we generate an exception and there's some point system that adds up over time. So a lot of times these gross behaviors, and by that I mean large, you know, structural things, we address with technical systems. is that something that negatively impacts trust?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, I say yes. If that's the only conversation that's happening. Because as you're raising, I'm going back to, well, why? Let's sit down with the employee or employees and have a discussion. Why are you padding your lunch? What's happening for you? And you can get a bunch of different reasons. Maybe someone needs more time for childcare, or maybe they're gaming the system for an income something. I don't know. But without understanding the motivation behind it, the system is treating the symptom and not necessarily the root problem. Now, maybe it is something that requires or would benefit from a systematic fix. But without having that initial conversation to let that employee either one, let them know that you've caught them. So if they're really trying to game the system. But I think most people are well-intended, and I just choose to come from that place of they're not trying to take advantage inherently. Most people, some do, most. So there's probably something going on. And by having that conversation and also saying, hey, I'm noticing this and this just isn't acceptable. So let's figure out another way that this can work, because you're a valued employee here and we want it to work out. So adding that positive messaging, I'm hoping that's true as well. You know, we'll really get at what the issues are.
Yeah. I mean, one of those key pieces in there, you know, people respect what you inspect, right? If you don't have systematic ways of showing what you care about, because I'll tell you, there are some businesses that don't care when people clock in and out. They don't care. Maybe these people are from a business like that, or they'd like to work in one. But if you're going to be a business that does care about that thing, a system is a way of signaling that priority, right?
Absolutely.
So there is some inherent communication in it, but it does feel like as businesses get bigger and scale and grow, the number of inspection points, the bureaucracy of it, the
mandates.
Yeah, the mandates, they grow. And then you wind up in this business where it's like, I follow these 85 steps and I don't do anything else and I'm not ever going to step out of it. And I'm challenged by this personally, and even in my own business, but in clients as well, when they come to us as an HR company to address a systematic issue, I feel like we have two options. We have carrots and sticks, and it's like, okay, we'll lower the number of unscheduled absences by providing a bonus if you have fewer than five. Or if you have more than seven, we're going to discipline you. And it's like, we can understand those systems. The reason I really wanted to interview you is because I feel like there's something. Is there a systematic way? Is there a, all right, here I am. I control the HR. I control what we tell managers or executives to kind of build out and structure. Is there a way to not necessarily do this from a carrot and stick approach, but to influence behavior and just make people better? I don't know how to phrase, but do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I follow where you're going. Well, I'm thinking of two things. How businesses have handled return to the office.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that in a moment, but you're making me also think about, is it carrot and stick, or is it extrinsic and intrinsic motivation? So I'm reminded of the book Drive by Daniel Pink.
Right.
And I recently reread it. There's so much good
exactly right
here, you know, where you're like,
as a systems person, I can put in external wins, losses, checks, inspections, attention, discipline. But I often feel like as we put more and more of those in, it's exactly right. It's like they lose then just the good people who want to come in on time and do the thing.
Right. Well, so, you know, return to office we're still talking about it because the large companies are now mandating 5 days a week and things like that. And I've had this debate with my husband because he runs a business and his particular business had metrics to show that when folks weren't in the office on a regular basis, and regular varied for him, that their performance declined.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, I can buy that. Like that, you can go to your employees and say, look, here's the results. So therefore we think that we perform better. We like each other better. And there's more camaraderie. All these things benefit from us being in person. I get that. When businesses just seemingly arbitrarily say, you must now come into the office, that that shows people that you don't trust them to be productive without being watched. And I heard a story of a high performing employee. The company had no official policy, but, you know, wanted people, if they could, to be in 2 days a week. And this employee was in 3 days a week. When the company moved to mandate, so now it becomes a mandate, not a suggestion or a question, you know, request. Mandate 3 days a week. That employee was furious.
Right.
Because now that employee is being told what to do. There's a perceived loss of flexibility. And he was doing the exact same thing. But because of the different tone around it, it's completely changed it from an intrinsic motivation to be there 3 days a week to an extrinsic have to be there 3 days a week. Deal with it, you know, without any good reason for being there.
So we're a process company, people processes. It's in the name of the podcast, right? Don't HR alone. So if we wanted to develop a structure for addressing a failure, whatever it is, or something that needs to change, whether that's, I don't know, we've talked about unscheduled absences and we've talked about return to work, but maybe it's also not completing performance reviews, or maybe it's underperforming. Just in general, whatever, you know, not meeting your sales targets. There's a thousand things that we as business owners have to address, right? Our attention. And if my only toolbox, my primary toolbox, is extrinsic motivators, is there a process that you could lay out, steps 1 through 5, broadly? Got a napkin, here's what you should do to address the trust, intrinsic motivation, joy of work. People just want to do it anyway. Like, what would you diagnose to help that with?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it comes down to communication. So you can have a system, but how you work within the system means a lot. And so I'm thinking about things like, well, to look at kind of the 6 elements of trust. So competence, which is the ability for someone to be able to do their job and not only do it, but continue to grow and perfect the skill. Openness, so communication, transparency. You know, thinking about a system, being transparent into why we think the system will be helpful. Also potentially involving your team members to help create the system or help implement, like have them be a part of the experience. So that it doesn't feel like an us versus them kind of thing. There's integrity, you know, so doing what you said you're going to do. And that takes on every angle, you know, so when management says they're going to do something, they need to do it. When we ask employees to do something, they need to do it. And there's a way to hold accountability without accountability feeling like punishment.
Right.
And again, that's into how we have the conversation. So it's a, hey, you know what? You didn't meet the deadline. Can you talk to me about what happened?
Right.
So instead of shame on you, you didn't meet a deadline. It's a, I noticed that this thing didn't happen. Can we talk about it? So it's opening the door for more transparency and communication and openness. So that it's in essence, I guess what I'm saying is I want the workplace to be a two-way dialogue, not a one-way dialogue. And I think when we implement systems and things like that, we rely on the system to take the place, if you will, of the conversations that need to happen as well. It's a guessing.
That's right. Yeah. So, and again, not the pushback, but the kind of the balance that I'm thinking of. So a lot of our listeners, and God bless you if you are, you're running a 5-man shop, right? And or person shop. And the answer to almost every one of your problems is, talk to your employees and have a conversation and come up with the solution together, right? Because at that size, any one of your employees is 20% of your workforce. They are a vested group. And one of them probably does about half the work in your company. So really make sure. And working collaboratively with them is what's necessary. And it's what's going to get you the best result. Because also running a 5-man shop, you probably don't know the answer. Right.
Yeah.
You don't know it.
Yeah.
Know it in a 100-person shop either. We're just making it up to friction.
Yeah. Well, and another element of trust is empowerment.
Right.
And so I tell people all the time, especially if you're a manager, involve others in the decision making. And they look at me and they're like, I'm saying involve. I'm not saying hand over.
That's right. So yeah, we have a,
you know, ask people for their perspectives and their opinions. And then the really key part is to go back afterwards once the decision's been made. And if you've included their perspectives on it, acknowledge, hey, that was really helpful. In fact, we're going to go that direction. Or say, you know what? We decided to go this way, but here's why. Like, your input was really valuable, but here are the other things to take into consideration. So they still feel acknowledged, but you're also teaching judgment.
Sure.
By showing them why you've gone the way that you've gone. And that's a really powerful, not only trust making, but morale building, engagement, issue, like all these kinds of things. When you involve, as you said already, involve them in creating the system, involve them in something as simple as what do you think around a decision. I mean, it can take forms a little bit every day that make people feel like they have skin in the game. And like,
let me kind of cap that out. If we were to try and change whatever, positively, negatively, inside an organization, something, your structure would be and again, this is the case in a lot of companies, but you would defer to collaboration. You would say, all right, we've received much feedback that we don't, or we have this problem, right? We consistently screw up this case onboarding thing in my law firm or whatever. We have great architects. We do good drawings, but every 6 months we screw one up real bad because we don't do this check. And your kind of default position, not always, obviously, if the building is burning down, someone just needs to say, run out the door. But in general would be to defer to some sort of collaborative process that can involve more people, get more information, but also collaboration almost for the purpose of collaboration, so as to get more involvement or understanding.
Yes.
What would you say to someone who says and in large companies, we often see that, right? You have task groups, you have 100 employees, you pick seven of them and say, I want you to go evaluate a new software provider for this thing. Gather information, they make a recommendation, so on and so forth. How does that work for the stuff that affects those employees directly, though? And that's where the trust comes in, right? Like, we recently had a group that we did benchmarking. We did a study around their leave, around their PTO, their how much sick leave should they get, how much vacation should they get, right? And we did a benchmark. They had received kind of, in our surveying, people weren't particularly satisfied with the amount of leave they got. They felt it was not sufficient. But in our benchmarking, it's in the 65th percentile. It wasn't, but it was well above average.
Yeah.
In that scenario, how do you trust, or how do you structure something so that people can weigh in on something that's obviously very important to them, so it doesn't feel like a directive, we're doing this? But also, that's kind of like asking it's like, how much do you want to get paid?
Well, right.
How do you deal with that sort of problem?
Just want more. Right.
Yeah. Lots more, please. Yeah.
Well, I think collaboration can take lots of forms. You know, collaboration could just be you simply ask for opinion. So like you did, you got the opinion of them. It doesn't have to be to design the whole system. Again, as you're giving simply that example, I go back to the, okay, why? What's driving the not enough feeling?
That's right. So maybe we surveyed and said, how are you satisfied? Are you? It was relatively low, but we didn't come back and do additional research on
what is it? Because candidly, they might be confusing vacation with flexibility.
Yeah.
Or is it the flexibility to not have to ask permission every time they have to take their kid to the doctor or leave early for a soccer game or, something like that. So confirm that we're talking about the same thing. And then it can be interesting to go back to them and say, okay, you've said that there's not enough. We're above industry average.
Right.
And financially, here's the range of vacation time that can work for us as a business that we can sustain. Because you still got to consider the performance metrics to still do whatever it is the business is doing with not having people there. So what do we do? And sometimes just put the big old problem back, put it right back in on the them. Middle.
Yeah. And if they come say, back and say, give everybody 500 days off a year, then we just go, okay, well, we can't do that.
Right. I mean, let's model it. Let's have, get the CFO in the mix and let's model it. Like, all right, if we did, here's what 500 days does. Here's what's 400, you know, so give them a little bit more information and I have a hunch. They'll be like, oh yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted more, which more is probably one day,
and
I think we as business people would be like, oh, they're going to want 2 more weeks. Like, no, one more day, they see the big picture.
We actually want
holidays,
And we just for those of you listening, if you're actually interested in the science of surveying and data, people's satisfaction is completely insane to try and survey. It does not work in any way. We tell people, you know, my master's degree is actually in labor economics. This is where my background is in data analysis and this sort of stuff. And I've shown people that I can change entirely people's satisfaction with compensation by changing the order of questions. It has nothing to do with the answer. It's just the order of question. I can raise an NPS score internally for referrals by 20% by changing the colors on the form. It's not relevant. What is relevant are trends over time. So surveying has a big place in the organization, but as Tracy mentioned, what it normally does is at best, it's going to lead to a deeper discussion that give you narratives to get ideas. And the other thing it can do is give you trends. If you ask the exact same questions on the exact same form in the exact same order, through the exact same method, don't change it from email to paper or into the app, no changes. You can trust that the change matters, right? So if you're surveying benefits satisfaction over the course of years, every quarter, and things change, that could give you some actual data. But you have no idea if a 2 out of 5 is great or a 1 out of 5 is great. You only know it's relative. Just a little side note there. That's really helpful also. So when we think about kind of the Joychiever model, if you were to tell a business owner, all right, I think that one, you know, trust is a core function of the business. What process, if they were to implement one process, maybe it's a training, maybe it's like, all right, I want every manager to go through the Joychiever process. Maybe that's your primary recommendation. But what would that look like? Like what to increase the amount of trust between employees and management and executives, like what is it that they could do at a 5-person business or a 50-person business structurally that would increase that level of trust across the organization?
I have two answers.
Awesome.
And one is self-serving in some ways, but first is share the book.
Have everybody
share, like, Kaylee, whether it's my book or some other resource, I think thinking about trust as a teachable skill is really critical.
Well, so that's a major mind shift, right? Because trust is something I give or don't. So what do you mean by it's a skill?
Well, it is something that you can learn. There are techniques that you can pick up. There are, one of the things I share with folks is that there are 6 pitfalls that I've identified where you may be inadvertently eroding trust and you're not even realizing it. One of them is called the disappearing act. You know, so I tell you to come to me anytime with questions, but then I'm either too busy, I'm not available, I'm non-responsive, you know, and we all do them. I'm not immune to some of this as well.
It's an open door policy.
Yeah, right?
Anytime, I'd love to hear from you. And then they message you and you're like, did you ask your manager? Like, come on, why are you jumping?
Or, you know, the 6 elements of trust that I talked about, when I do an exercise, I have people identify what their trust musts are. So for me, integrity is one of the important pillars. People need to show up on time and they need to do what they say they're going to do when they said they're going to do it. Like, that's just a trust must. The negative form of that is a pet peeve. So I encourage teams to every individual to identify their trust musts and then share them across the team. Because if I know that, you know, timeliness is one of your triggers, and I want to build trust with you, I'm going to make sure I'm on time. So lots of individuals make, so it's teachable. It's also awareness raising,
right.
You know, and starting to have trust as a part of the conversation as a team. So that's one. Second is to training managers. Because the people managers are the biggest impact on engagement, trust, satisfaction, well-being. There's so many resources out there. And I'm talking like the day-to-day manager, whether that be a supervisor or a middle manager or what have you. If someone has somebody else working for them,
that
understanding the impact that they have and the ways that they could most productively and positively guide another person's work will always be a worthwhile investment.
So when you think about manager training, so I'm a 40-person shop. I've got, I don't know, probably out of those, maybe let's call them 10 people in various levels of management. Yep. Maybe it's more like 15, something like that. I know when I started my company, I've never worked anywhere for real. I'm a nerd who read a lot of books and wound up starting a company. And 15 years later, I just keep making new mistakes, but I try not to repeat them. I often tell my clients, you're the biggest company I've ever worked for. I worked at a 3-person cell phone shop in high school, but that was about the largest company I ever worked for. So I make up a lot. I'm trying to figure out a lot of this stuff with them, right? Yeah. When I think about manager training, I would say the majority of companies, the amount of manager training is non-operational, right? Uh-huh. Not how to make a better boat, but like how to manage. Somewhere close to zero, right? What would you think would be an appropriate investment in time or a schedule? Or like, how would you, I'm a small business and I'm like, well, I don't do manager training, but I've decided JoyChiever is the training to have. That's how we're going to base our company. What would you think about as a reasonable amount of training?
Yeah. I think 40 hours in a year. I would say if a business can devote 1 week, business week of a person's time towards learning in a year, that would be a good baseline.
Okay.
We should probably do more. The good news is that there's lots of ways to learn. So maybe it's a book club. When the managers and you just pick up a book, you start reading and talk about it. There's so many online resources. There's so many self-paced resources. There's certainly you can hire consultants to come in. You can send them out to places. I mean, on manager training generally, there's just so many ways to bite that apple. But I like the way you're approaching it, how much time. And I think a week, 5 business days is a great investment.
Yeah. Or an hour a week, approximately, where they, yeah, you know, plus those, you know, 1/4 a year where they don't get any of it, but something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. So what would you think? Let's take like an unstructured business, relatively low, a small business that's new to this stuff. What would you think their result would be from investing an hour a week or 40, you know, a week a year in focused training for management? In particular, around creating this trusting environment, right? Like, what would you think their results would be?
I think the results could be limitless, really, truly. But but to get to measurable outcomes, I think retention improves. I think productivity improves. I think innovation improves. Teaming improves. Just off the top of my head, you know, think about something as simple as delegation and feedback, right? That's a core staple of a management skill.
Right.
So when productivity improves, when I know how to delegate clearly,
right,
for you and tell you what I'm expecting, when I'm expecting it, what I want it to look like, supporting you and how you like to learn and go forth. Because I also love personality stuff. So there are some personality styles that like all the details. Some just say, give me the end result, let me go. So you got to adjust a little bit to that. So I think half the time we're not clear in delegating to people. So therefore, productivity is going to be impacted because we're going to get mistakes back or not what we want that has to be redone. I have to spend time, or it's going to take people longer to get there, what have you. And then giving feedback is, they have to go hand in hand. And people think that giving feedback is negative criticism. I'm like, no,
right.
It's the positive part too.
Because
positive feedback perpetuates mastery.
That's right.
And I need to give it very specifically, you know, so it's, Rami, do this. I really like this, which is a signal to you to keep doing that. right. over and over again.
And that influences behavior so quickly. It blows.
Yeah.
And some of it's wild, especially if you're someone who doesn't give positive feedback very often, but you accidentally luck into it on a Friday. Oh, I really liked how you did that, Jeff. It will blow you away. Jeff will never stop doing that for 10 years.
Right.
And he'll be like, hey, did you notice? I did the same thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
So to sum up, I think what kind of pull that together is there is a, if you are a smaller business or even a larger one, but you're a smaller business that has not yet embarked deeply on the process of creating good people leaders through management. Not about being a better architect. It's about being able to manage people. This is a skill across the board. And I got to tell you, an MBA doesn't cover it much, right? These are the skills of just you think, oh, management skills, that's a broad thing. But really think about it. How many times in your business does Jack think that Sally's got this and Sally don't got that? That's the art of delegation. How many hours and days are spent not having a conversation with bad feelings floating around, avoiding each other, trying not to work together, when a 15-minute conversation by a skilled person could resolve that issue? If you haven't invested into those things, then you can see a ridiculous outsized return. And if you are even marginally investing in it, upskilling it and up-leveling it by utilizing greater experts, more engaging curriculum can be a huge point. And on that, Tracy, if someone listening thought, okay, I want to start implementing some of these broader trainings around creating an environment that I want to go to work at, right? Where I'm not micromanaging all these little things and putting in place a 16-point process to make sure that no one is going to screw me, and they wanted to reach out to you, where should they go and what should they be on the lookout for?
Yeah. Well, best place is my website, joyachiever.com. And I'm also a pretty prolific poster on LinkedIn. So following me on LinkedIn, I love giving away tidbits, nuggets of value on that too. So those are probably the two easiest ways to find me.
Awesome. And we'll link those below. Also, in about just a little while, in the beginning of March, we are doing a live training and webinar specifically on the tough conversations, right? How to have management conversations around the most common topics of behaviors, not meeting core values, performance reviews, and what we call FRAC, right? When you have a failure, how do you address it? Those sorts of items. You want to check those out. That link will be below as well. Any listeners are welcome to join that for free. In the meantime, check out joyachiever.com. Tracy, thank you for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us today. And I look forward to seeing in the future how we can work together. I really appreciate you coming out.
I think I might attend your March session. It sounds interesting.
It'll be a party. All right. Thank you all for listening. If you need additional information down in the bottom, please like, comment, subscribe, ask your questions. We'll be happy to forward them along to Tracy if you comment down below any of her kind of pieces. If you disagree, tell me. I really want to know that. I got enough hard, tough dude clients who go, no, that's not how it works. You beat them. And then if they survive it, that's when you trust them. And I think Tracy has a strong point that that does delay a lot of things. If you disagree, tell us about it. And if you agree, tell me a story of when it worked out for you. In the meantime, it's time for you to go out there, stop listening to a dang podcast, have a great day, and get your work done.